Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, here we go. 5 o'clock hour. Cofield and Company, ESPN Las Vegas. John Von Tobel is in from 12:30 Beast in the Game. James is running the show. Miles Simmons is up with us here as he joins us on Wednesdays at 5 o'clock. What's up, Miles?
Oh, not too much. I think I'm having a better day than the former Michigan coach, huh? My gosh.
Yeah, I don't know that we want to get into the reasons as to why it happened because it's still unfolding, and he was detained by police for some questioning, so don't really know what's happening here. But it's certainly an earthquake to the coaching front because Michigan is going to make a run at someone significant, whether it's someone in the NFL or more likely in college, and then that further creates more chaos. But that's a mega job that's open now.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it's a mega job that's unexpectedly open, right? And, you know, we thought that probably, I guess we all thought that Lane Kiffin going to LSU would be the biggest coaching story of the offseason that in college football. But now with this, I mean, it's just, it's getting, I don't know, is it fair to say or unfair to say it's getting weirder and weirder by the hour as things go on here with Sherrone Moore? I mean, it's pretty incredible when you think that, you know, he's got this job, well, had this job because he was there under Jim Harbaugh, who leaves, goes to the Chargers a year after he tried really, really hard to get the Vikings job and didn't end up getting it. And now here we are. And man, oh man, it's very, very, you know, weird that this is where we are now. We're a couple years removed from Michigan actually winning a national championship. And now here we are with this.
So, John, you said you saw internet postings like 6 days ago about something with Moore, that there was something up?
There was a tweet being reposted that was from 6 days ago in which a profile had said something along the lines, I'm paraphrasing, Sherrone Moore is cheating with, named the woman, you got to fire him, get him out of there. That was from 6 days ago. So there was something out there apparently.
Yeah, the rumors were flying. I hadn't really seen much until today, but you know, the rumors were flying on message boards, Reddit, you know, and they ended up, you know, they ended up being true.
Well, hopefully not to make light of all of this, because this could be a really serious incident, but hopefully Dave Portnoy doesn't call for the murder of Sherrone Moore as he did with Pete Carroll, because he lost his bet.
Which,
Justin Watkins, our legal insider, told us yesterday, charges probably will not be pursued, but they could be. And that's why Barstool and Portnoy put out a statement backing off from it really quickly.
I don't want to.
So, oh, I'm sure.
The grifting continues.
Can I just say really quick? I know it's my last time.
I know that you're holding back.
Go ahead.
I just have to say really quickly. You cannot try to throw in everybody's face, I had a quarter mil on that. You don't understand what it's like to bet like that. But then act like that when a quarter mil is nothing on for you to wager, right, and yet you act like that when you lose said wager. Like, you don't get to have it both ways. Act like you've been there before. I think it's cooler if you're like, whatever, I just lost a quarter mil, I move on. But instead, you're clearly wagering beyond your means if you're acting like that. So just a thought.
I don't hear.
I think it's a good thought.
I don't hear Drake whining about all his losing bets. No, I think he's also, gifted into the sports book, and they're not as big as the losses say. But anyway, okay. In LA, you just got to watch the Eagles. What the hell is going on with this team? Trying to diagnose it. People are coming with all these crazy reasons. What do you think?
I think it's as simple as A, the scheme's not been as good with Kevin Petullo, and B, Jalen Hurts is executing it even worse. I don't know what it is, but I'll tell you, like, sitting in the press box at SoFi on Monday night, you could tell that, A, many times guys were not open for the Eagles, and then sometimes when they were, Jalen Hurts would try to make a play that he didn't need to make. He tried to, you know, kind of play beyond what he should have been doing. The most interesting thing I thought he said at the post-game press conference, which, by the way, took a really long time for, and I don't know how the Eagles usually do things, but Nick Sirianni And Jalen Hurts took over a half hour from the end of the game to get down into the press conference, which is very odd for a team that's about to take a red eye back to Philadelphia. You know, that's just not something that I usually see when I go to visitors' press conferences at SoFi. But anyway, once Jalen Hurts finally got there, what I thought that was maybe the most interesting thing he said was, for that last pick in overtime, he said, "I knew it was going to be a tight window throw." And at that point, if you know it's going to be a tight window throw, don't do it. There's no reason to do it. It's second down. Live to fight another day. At worst, you're in position to tie the game. And you know what? Ties matter at this time of year when you're thinking about the postseason and playoff position. It was just a really, really bad play and a really, really bad, bad, bad game for Jalen Hurts. And I don't know that this is something that the Eagles are going to be able to solve over the course of the next 4 weeks or into the postseason. This is now an offseason issue because you have to make some adjustments with the scheme and with the offensive play caller.
I was going to say, I would assume you have to find a new offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
Are they hoping that Steve Cofield's boy, Mike McDaniel, is going to get fired and bring him in? But the real question is, how does this, like, what do we do with Jalen Hurts? Because like his two greatest games, I think, of his career have come on the biggest stage, and yet he clearly seems to be a guy that needs almost everything around him to be near perfect to operate at that level.
Well, I think – but if we have a better offensive coordinator and a better offensive scheme and guys aren't just, like, tied up the whole time, then I think we'd have a better gauge of that. At least okay. I would have a better gauge of it, you know, because – I think that Jalen Hurts is a good quarterback. I don't know that I would put him among the elites of the elites. He does have a Super Bowl ring, so like that's part of it. But also, you could really say that Vic Fangio kind of helped that a lot, you know, with the defensive scheme and how they got pressure with four on Patrick Mahomes in that Super Bowl in New Orleans. So I don't know. I mean, I think he's a good quarterback. But a lot of good quarterbacks need a lot of help around them in order to really elevate the team and be great. And so I don't know if that's a bad thing. You know, quarterbacks don't grow on trees. I don't think the Eagles have to move on from Jalen Hurts by any means. I think that the first thing you've got to do is correct the offensive scheme. And that's why Nick Sirianni is trying to spend more time within the offensive meetings. That didn't really work very well last week, but we'll see if it helps, you know, against the Raiders, which I guess is kind of a homecoming game this week for them.
So none of us want to blame Jalen Hurts. We're talking to Miles Simmons, Pro Football Talk. I am going to blame one person with the Eagles.
Okay.
It's Howie Roseman.
Okay.
A.J. Green has become a problem. And it is obvious when we talk.
Color.
A.J. Brown.
I'm sorry. A.J. Brown. I don't know why A.J. Green. A.J. Brown. A.J. Brown.
When's the last time we talked about A.J. Green?
I know. A.J. Green's become a problem. A.J. Brown has become.
I wrote Mike McDonald is Mike McDaniel today. It's something in the water. I don't know.
I do it. He's become a problem. The handwriting was on the wall going back to last year. I don't know if he got any calls. I don't care. I think addition by subtraction, looking back on it, would have helped this organization. I didn't even like the effort on some of the throws that were thrown his way. I don't like the chemistry at all.
I don't either. But again, I think it part of it is really the scheme, Steve. And you know, Jalen Hurts, like I said, he's not helping. Whenever you have as many turnovers as he had in 2-on-1 play, which my God, you're not helping yourself. But the problem is the offense in general. It's not just A.J. Brown. It's not just Jalen Hurts. It's not just Kevin Petullo. I mean, they've got injuries on the offensive line as well. Lane Johnson not out there right now as he deals with a foot injury at right tackle. So, I mean, there's just a lot that's gone wrong. And Saquon Barkley has not been nearly as effective as he was last year. And I think in part that's because of the way the offense is designed. And the offensive line has some different personnel in there. So all of that kind of adds up to what it is that we're seeing. I don't think it's just Jalen Hurts, though Jalen Hurts definitely has to perform better. I don't think it's just A.J. Brown, though A.J. Brown needs to make more plays when they are available to him. You know, if the ball is a little bit behind you, you are paid so that you still make that catch and help out your quarterback, right? So all of these things need to improve. And that's why I think it's more of an offseason problem where you have to kind of reconstruct this thing is more of a hole than you can just get by right now.
Okay, I can accept that. I can accept a difference of opinions. I'm gonna give you a chance to back off a tweet. Otherwise, I think you're going to get your head ripped off.
Fine.
When you were talking about Phillip Rivers, Miles Simmons, and the end of your tweet said, why not on the Colts? Are you sure? Are you sure why not is what you want to say here?
No.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, listen, the why not, obviously, is that he's 44 years old and he hadn't played in 5 years. Yeah. And, like, that's...
Yes.
But the why not is more, okay, if Riley Leonard is hurt and he can't go, right, then you're down to Brett Rypien, who can't play. I mean, he can't. I've watched Brett Rypien enough times. He can't play. Like, then at that point, okay. But if Riley Leonard can still go and that's your 3QB, then fine. My issue then becomes... Because Mike Florio wrote something about this, and obviously I wrote with him at Pro Football Talk. He basically was saying, well, the Colts didn't plan for something like this, even though they had, you know, an oft-injured quarterback. And my thought is, well, nobody plans to go down to four quarterbacks. You had Anthony Richardson as your backup at the beginning of the season, who's an experienced, you know, somewhat guy. He's made starts. That's your backup. Riley Leonard was your third quarterback. Riley Leonard was never supposed to be forced into action. Richardson goes out with a freak accident injury. So then, okay, so now you've got Leonard as your number two. And nobody can go to four quarterbacks, right? It's why Joe Flacco doing what he did a couple years ago for the Browns was so mind-boggling, because once you get down to a certain situation, you're bleeped. So I just... That to me is where it's like, this is a break glass in case of emergency situation. Who else knows the offense? You get Phillip Rivers coming back with somebody he knows very, very, very well, an offense that they understand and, you know, can do things together. He knows the teammates already. That's where it makes sense to me, as opposed to somebody like a Heineke who doesn't know the offense. So I don't know. That's the way I see it.
Miles, he's 285 pounds. Like, what?
He's not 285 pounds. I mean, come on.
What are we doing
come
here?
Come on.
You see some of the footage of him today?
I bet you
you see the press conference?
I bet
hey,
you
man.
Is.
Look, he's going to go out the there guy. And shot put that thing. He's not going to throw anything over 20 yards because he couldn't really do that at the end of you know his career anyway. So I don't even know if we're going to see it, right? I don't.
Yes.
Riley Leonard was a full participant in practice today. And if that's the case, then great. Phillip Rivers can be on the practice squad and, you know, support Riley Leonard and help Riley Leonard, and we don't have to see him. But I understand why the Colts are doing this. I do.
I don't. But I would also say, don't you, because I made this case, and Steve and I talked about this earlier, one of the things that I kind of, like, I believe this won't happen for a very reason, and by the way, Miles, I don't know if you remember, I am a Colts fan. Carly Ursay Gordon will not let this happen. She seems like she's got a really strong head on those shoulders. And after she's run this thing and had that notebook out, there's no shot she would let her billion-dollar franchise turn over to a 44-year-old grandfather. No way.
Would you? But okay, but here's the thing. Would you rather see Phillip Rivers, who's a Hall of Fame semifinalist, or Brett Rypien? Like that's your because those
I mean,
are your
I'd
choices.
I'd rather go to the emergency quarterback who is currently Tyler Warren and let's just run some Wildcat.
No, yeah, that's not a viable plan. That's not. You need a quarterback.
The 49ers did it in a playoff game. Okay.
Work.
Yeah.
Didn't work well.
Well, how did that turn out? Right. Like, you know, if you're actually trying to win games, if Phillip Rivers can figure out where to run the ball, which is a quarterback skill that many do not have, and nobody's going to be able to fool him, right? Even Mike McDonald, who is really, really good.
Yeah.
I that's why it makes sense to me, because he knows the offense and he knows how it should be.
My real problem is Houston, Seattle, Jacksonville are all on the schedule. Like those are some really bad. Those are some really dominant pass rushes that you can't be 275 and in that pocket. You got to be able to move a little bit. Sorry,
I mean, you can have a broken leg and play those teams either, right? Yeah. So, you know, I'm not saying that there's a silver lining to Daniel Jones blowing out his Achilles, because there's not. But that also would have been an issue. So, I mean, the thing that would have helped right now is if you could have seen Anthony Richardson. But, you know, it's really unfortunate what happened to him.
So, in all seriousness, with this happening, what do you do with Daniel Jones? Like, what are the options? I know there's, like, franchise, there's re-sign, there's let him hit the market. Like, what in the world do the Colts do? Because they don't have the first-round pick, obviously, the next two. They shipped it off. Clearly, they thought Daniel Jones was going to be the guy because they traded for Gardner. So what do they do?
I think that they still sign him to a multi-year deal, kind of like the Buccaneers did with Baker Mayfield. Like, I think that that's kind of the contract framework, let's call it, that you would probably go with Daniel Jones. Because, again, quarterbacks don't grow on trees. You've already got Anthony Richardson in there from a couple years ago. He's not the solution. I think we all understand that. And he also has no trade value. So where else are you going to get a quarterback? You try to get Daniel Jones to this mid-level, you know, $40 million a year-ish tier, which, you know, ironically is kind of what he was getting before from the Giants. But nah, I think that that would probably make the most sense going forward, because they need somebody to stabilize that position. He did stabilize the position. You just hope he can come back, be effective off the Achilles next year.
Is this evidence to those that would say the NFL has a quarterback development problem, that the quarterback situation is so bad that Shane Steichen and the Colts, in order to offset some injuries, have to sign a 44-year-old dude that has not played since 2021?
Yes, but there's a player development problem generally. I mean, you like for the offensive line, for instance, right? Why are offensive lines so bad? And I've seen, you know, Mitchell Schwartz, Jeff Schwartz, those brothers talk about this on Twitter. You don't have off-season programs like you used to. So there just is not time for reps for development. And when you get into a situation like that where, you know, it could be left tackle goes out and you've only got, you know, one guy that somewhat has experience, which is why, you know, this is kind of not what we're talking about, but Essa Pole, or Pole, however you pronounce that man's last name, that was playing for the Chiefs, right? Wanya Morris goes out in the first play at left tackle. He's the backup left tackle. The Pole comes in, and he actually acquits himself pretty well, which is almost shocking for somebody who was an undrafted free agent and then has not gotten the reps. And he came in and, you know, Patrick Mahomes was somewhat running for his life, but it wasn't necessarily because of what was going on the left side all the time. And so that it was so surprising because you don't have the development time for these young offensive linemen. You can say the same thing about quarterbacks, right? It's just, with the way the offseason programs are now run and the restrictions that are on there based on the CBA, which is fine, you just don't have the time to develop. You don't have 2-a-days in training camp where guys get those reps and guys develop. You know, you get to the regular season and starting quarterback takes all the ones reps, backup quarterback usually takes the scout team reps, and the third quarterback kind of putzes around a little bit and like throws individual drills. Like that's the way it is. So there's no time for development. So it makes it that much more difficult. And I don't really know how you solve that.
Miles Simmons with us up on Twitter at Miles A. Simmons, part of Peacock and Pro Football Talk's programming, a writer for Pro Football Talk. John, can you loop in the audience and loop in Miles if he didn't see it on the Joe Burrow vibe?
Oh, yeah. Did you see this? So for our audience, a very Andrew Luckian press conference from Joe Burrow today, talking about his general happiness and playing the game of football, which I thought was pretty surprising. The actual quote from him, "If I want to keep doing this, I have to have fun doing it. I have been through a lot. If it's not fun, then what am I doing it for?" Later on was quoted as saying, "There's just a lot of things going on right now," end quote.
Yeah, and I saw that they followed up and asked him personal or professional, and he said all of the above. So, yeah, I think you're right when you call it Andrew Luckian as a press conference. And if I'm the Cincinnati Bengals, that is warning signs going off, right? And it means that they need to make some significant changes. And I think in some ways that could cost Zach Taylor's job. And, you know, well, it's not that Zach Taylor's a terrible coach. I don't necessarily think he is. But when you have the same issues on defense over and over and over and over again, and it's been years now that they've had these issues, you've replaced defensive coordinators. That's, to me, both a personnel and a coaching issue. So if you replace the defensive coordinators, then you still have, you know, the same crap going on. Then maybe it's not just the defensive coordinator. Maybe it's you. And, you know, the Bengals are not the kind of team that does a lot of that kind of changing. You know, the Browns are the Brown family, I guess I should say, is they're not the most free spending, let's call it that. And so, given that, I don't necessarily know what Zach Taylor's contract information is offhand or how many years he's got left, but I think that the Bengals really do need to take a hard look at potentially changing coaches, because if you've got your quarterback saying something like this, that's not good. I mean, that's the kind of stuff where it should set off alarm bells in your head. And that comes after Joe Burrow used a lot of his power last year to make sure that T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase were signed. And they brought back Mike Gesicki and all that too. So, yeah, that's a really interesting thing to hear from Joe Burrow, especially, you know, we're in December 10th. Like, there's still a quarter of the season left. So I'm interested to see where that goes.
Make sure you go to Pro Football Talk, and you can see some changes in the NFL schedule on the 27th and the 28th. I'll just make you go there. I'm not going to tell you what they are. Miles, we appreciate it. Thank you so much, buddy.
All right, take care, guys.
There he is, Miles Simmons. Miles A. Simmons up on Twitter. Great writer for Pro Football Talk. Go to NBCSports.com. Pro Football Talk, I think the best place to go to is Rumor Mill. So bang it! Bang the Rumor Mill. All right, on the way back, we have some Raiders news. Colton Miller. Back soon, okay, maybe. Henry Ruggs news is in, some Raiders-related stuff, but we know that Adam Hill follows Michigan very closely. We'll get his take on what's going on with Sherrone Moore and what the future could look like for the Wolverine football program.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Reminder, on Friday, we bring back our Dollar Loan Center Picks Contest. We do that every Friday, Cofield and Company, Dollar Loan Center Picks Contest. There'll be over $500 up for grabs.
Can I answer?
Last week's winner, we make the folks, one caller takes three straight-up picks from the games that we pick, and it just has not worked out in recent weeks. So our good buddy was wrong last week. Bengals, Bills, Jets, Dolphins. Did get the Titans. But every Friday, Dollar Loan Center presents the Cofield and Company football contest with cash available. Adam Hill is having a day. I know he's working on a lot of important stories, and this isn't necessarily in his beat, but he is a Michigan man of sorts. Not a joking matter with some of the stuff we're seeing, and it's very early on in getting the information on Sherrone Moore. But Sherrone Moore fired as the Michigan coach. What's your reaction?
First of all, I think blessing in disguise, right? I mean, it was an awkward situation of keeping him or letting him go and only give him a couple of years, and I think there was some hesitation. But it's a tough time to lose a coach this late in the process, but at the same time, probably a good time to move on for Michigan football.
So what's the first call? I think that program is one of the few that can call pretty much anybody outside of maybe like a Ryan
yep.
Day. So who's the first call?
First call is Marcus Freeman, for sure, and it's not going to happen, and that's fine. But, I mean, I'm set on who I want to be the coach of Michigan, and I don't think it's that crazy, and people might think it is, but Kalen DeBoer, come on down. That's the easy answer. He wants out. I don't think Alabama would be that depressed to lose him. I think Michigan would love to have him, so let's go.
I don't think he's that crazy. I mean, that was like one of the first names. He's kind of a Midwest guy, right? And like you said, I guess my question would be, if they beat Oklahoma, how much does that complicate things?
I'm willing to wait. And like maybe it becomes not a throwaway year, but a really tough year that late in the process for sure. But I'll certainly be cheering for Oklahoma. I'll tell you that. I think it would be much easier and a better process. But that's who I want, and I think that's who Michigan should be focused on right now.
Earlier today, Freddie Coleman on his show was talking about John Gruden to Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, it's fun and interesting, I guess, but I don't – like, that has Bill Belichick written all over it to me. And I know there are different stages because, you know, Gruden is just so hungry and desperate, and Belichick was just kind of taking a job, and he – you know, we kind of knew he wasn't going to work that hard. I think Gruden would kind of work harder, but I don't know that he can just jump right into recruiting at that kind of a level, especially in an NIL world and everything that's going on, and take that job. I mean, it'd be fun. I wouldn't be that opposed to it. It's not the worst name because there is a name that's possible that, Steve, I will no longer be a Michigan fan.
Ooh, wait a second.
Josh Allen becomes head coach of the Michigan Wolverines?
Yeah, no.
Wait, who's a terrible choice?
If they call Brian Kelly, I'm out.
Oh. That's understandable.
Got the background, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm out. And it's like I keep hearing the name and I can't do it.
Why are you out?
I just can't. First of all, he's now going to develop a Michigan accent. We're going to have to deal with that. He's just fake to me. I've never liked him. I've never enjoyed him. I wouldn't want him to be running a program that I cheer for. And I don't think he'd be that good either. So I just don't think he's that great of a coach to start with, especially to have that kind of attitude. I wouldn't be able to support that program anymore.
What if they couldn't get a sitting Power Four coach to move over to Michigan? Then where?
I mean, there's guys that I think are waiting for NFL jobs. Like, would I be that opposed to, like, Jesse Minter? No. I think that would be okay. But I don't know. I think it's so new that there's still a lot to go through. Like, my immediate thought was just, it's Kalen DeBoer, and that's the end of the list. But you're right. It's possible that he says no and he doesn't want it, or whatever reason it doesn't work out. Like,
yes.
They're going to have to go somewhere else. And it is late in the process, right? I don't love the timing of it. I don't mind them moving on from Moore, but I don't love the timing of this, especially since it seems like they may have known and not released any of this until the recruiting period was over, which is really shady too. So, yeah, I think there's names out there that will be fine, and that would probably be, you know, guys who will work hard and things like that. It could work out potentially, but I think Michigan can get whoever they want, and I don't think that they should, you know, not think about anyone. I even wish they would try to pull a Chris Beard with Lane Kiffin.
I brought that up too. I mean, but Lane is really morally an upstanding man, so I don't think he would do that, Adam. It's a ridiculous ask of him. Adam Hill with us, by the way, Las Vegas Review Journal. You hear him on Cofield and Company as well. How solid is Bryce Underwood's status as quarterback at Michigan?
I mean, as long as the check's clear, I think he's okay, right?
I mean, can't you find checks in a lot of places, or is it tied to the program and, you know, somebody else?
Not those checks.
Okay.
I mean, it's on. I mean, well, we'll see after 1 year if they, you know, think about it, and the very, very generous donor / wife of donor, who's a Michigan fan, rethinks things. I know there was some comments from Dave Portnoy in between trying to murder Pete Carroll, talking about, you know, renegotiating deals potentially of some of the Michigan players. So I think, look, Bryce Underwood, people forget how young he was. I know the hype and the amount of money that he was paid, people thought that he should be better than he was and have this unbelievable season. And I think at times he was good, but he was 17 when the season started. Like, he's a kid. And so to play at the level he did, which, you know, admittedly wasn't outstanding, but it was fine at that age, with that much pressure under you. And by the way, a coach that I think was not only in over his head, but very distracted by Bumble and Tinder. I think it was, you know, pretty impressive for what he did at that age.
Well, I don't think it's an anti-Underwood thing. I'm just curious, in today's day and age, like I told Steve, not only is Michigan calling whoever they want right now, I'm assuming that Bryce Underwood's people are getting calls right now as well. And so you're trying to do anything possible to get him in the portal. What if I told you could get Dillingham and his former quarterback at Arizona State?
Who would be his offensive coordinator?
Okay. Name him. I don't know. Whatever makes Adam Hill happy.
No, I wouldn't want him to bring his offensive coordinator.
Oh, that good,
that's
good
a good point. Yes,
Marcus Arroyo coming in as a Michigan man. Let's do it. You know,
I don't know that he fits.
You don't know that he fits.
I'm not sure how well he fits there. Plus, it's snowy, wearing the sunglasses. I don't know. I don't know if that works either.
Yeah. A couple of Raiders notes. Colt Miller returns to practice Wednesday. What does that mean?
Well, I talked to him. He said he's got a date in mind of when he'd like to play. But, you know, just because you have thought ahead of, like, this is what I want to be cleared by, this is what I want to play, it doesn't mean you're going to be fully medically cleared. And they want to see him practice a couple days. And I talked to him before practice, so I'm not sure how he came out of practice. But he seemed, you know, very excited to get back on the field. If you look back, I mean, I know, you know, the offensive line has been atrocious, and the stats are historical in terms of, you know, only three teams have, you know, led the league in a loud and given up for 75 yards or less for a full season. You know, historically bad what they've done in terms of an offensive line. But that last game Colton Miller played was the game against the Bears. And I know the Bears were awful at the time in terms of their run defense, but they were actually good that day. 230 yards rushing. Ashton Jeanty at his career high, almost 140 on the ground. They only had three pressures that whole game. And that was Colton Miller's last game. It looked like they were maybe figuring something out, and then he goes down and everything falls apart. So he has been a big loss. I know he wants to get back out there. I think the general sentiment, I think, from a lot of players would be, hey, I just watched this awful mess of a team. There's no reason for me to back and play three or four games at this age under contract for 2 years. But I don't think that's him. This is his first time ever on IR. It was a very new experience. He never did this before, and it was really difficult to win a game. So I think he wants to get out there and play. I just don't know if it's going to be this week. But we'll be able to get a game or two in here at the end of the season.
Adam, we appreciate it. You're breaking up a little bit, so we'll let you go. Thanks for the instant reaction. We'll talk to you.
Also, don't give your girlfriends raises when you're on the public record. That's the advice for everybody.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll write that down.
Yes. Appreciate it. I think we know what he's saying. I think.
That was pretty clear what he was saying. He said it.
I think he was referring to the situation we were discussing earlier.
What, big guys?
No. No, I just meant Sharon Moore.
Oh, okay.
Should we have gotten into big guy dressing with Adam Hill?
Yeah.
His phone wasn't going on the fritz there?
You would have been into it.
Colton Miller returning.
To save the season?
Well, I've made
I'm sure you guys have made the case.
This is a tough one. Guys want to play.
Well, I mean, guys want to play. I'm sure you guys have made the case. I have said already, and I will be on record in local radio, you know what's coming. If I'm Tom Brady, I'm going into that meeting room. I'm shutting the door. I'm sitting across from Pete Carroll, and I'm looking him in the eye, and I'm telling him, if you win one more game,
yeah,
you're fired.
That's the pressure. Don't do it.
Yes.
Steady diet of young guys.
This is it. Yes. They've been refusing, by all accounts, to play the young guys. This is the time. Let's go.
If you're Brady, do you also demand that he plays Geno Smith?
Ooh, let's see. I've been
asking. The Kenny Pickett thing is dangerous.
I've been asking.
Playing for a job.
Is it a downgrade? And he's looking for revenge, although I don't know why. But he's looking for revenge this weekend. He's out for blood. And he'll oppose the second-best quarterback on the Eagles' depth chart.
I hadn't even thought of the revenge angle. You're serious with the?
Yeah.
I was like, wait, they're not playing the Browns or the Steelers.
He went in there at the end of the year and helped them win a game. So did Tanner McKee, who might actually be the best of the three.
Let's go into the grab bag, which is a preview of what's going on around college basketball, and also holiday preview: the meals on Thanksgiving. Check that. Christmas Eve and Christmas, very important.
Cofield and Company presents Grab Bag on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right. I love Christmas. I think John mostly likes it, but he has a different perspective because he has kids, and there's a whole another level of responsibility when you have little ones.
Let me say for the record, Christmas is my favorite holiday.
Okay.
Okay.
I love holiday food. And
is there holiday food for Christmas?
We're going to find out. Okay. Michael Felder comes on with us on Thursdays, but I actually had a chance to talk to him today, and we got into, because he's like Mr. Thanksgiving. He's super intense.
Sure.
He talks about Thanksgiving and the turkey stock that he makes like 3 weeks out, and I know he's getting ready for Christmas. He's a massive family guy. So listen to him here as he starts talking about he's getting ready to prep the Christmas meal.
So we got a fat lip on it. Little cap, so we're good on that. We have a dinner party. My wife wanted to have some of her friends over because, oddly enough, a lot of our friends are staying in town for Christmas. Some of them are having, like, family over, like, grandma, grandpas, aunts, uncles, you know, like, sisters, brothers, what have you. So they're going to do that, but we're going to do, like, we wanted to do, like, a friend, like, you know how people do Friendsgiving? We wanted to do something with the kid, with us and with the kids, and nobody, we don't want to have to worry about everybody getting a babysitter because it's a nightmare. So we're going to do kids with pizzas, movie night downstairs. I'm going to do, I'll take part of that ribeye, turn it into sliders. Make sliders like hand food because everyone's going to have to run up and down the stairs. Because everyone's kid is going to be like, "And mommy, what happened?" And you're going to be like, "This is ridiculous." So I want to do that and do that with some dipping sauces and then have like just like French fries and the whole deal. And like instead of like a sit down true dinner party, like adults playing like board games and hanging out and watching TV and just relaxing, knowing that like your kids are safe downstairs. I'll do popcorn for the kids as well. Popcorn's for the adult. And we'll do that, hang out, have a couple bottles of wine, have some whiskey and just chill. And then for Christmas dinner, we're doing the ribeye. I'm going to fry it, actually. What? It should be. Yeah, yeah. Look it up, dude. It's a thing.
How do you fry it? You're saying, are you talking in fryer outside?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Outside.
Okay.
Big, like, I mean, it's going to be like 6 pounds. It's going to go in there, drop it in, get it up to temp, let it rest. We should have medium rare, good to go. And then we're going to do a horseradish mashed potato. I'm not doing gravy. I'm just going to do a jus for the steak. We're going to do shaved almond green beans. And my wife would kill me if I didn't do mac and cheese.
Right.
And then I'm going to make a cheesecake.
Hello.
With a strawberry swirl.
We've gone over the green bean casserole versus the almond green beans.
No. My wife's from the Midwest. She liked green bean. She likes it. I'm not making them.
Out. Yeah, it's not in my house.
No. If I'm at your mom's house, I'll make it. But we live in Charlotte, North Carolina. First of all, we should be having collard greens anyways. But I will make the shaved almond green beans with balsamic. I hate green beans.
The intensity always gets me.
Yeah.
Because I know you like to cook. We had a big argument with Ryan McKinnell about being like trying to be too detailed on meals. This guy is Michael Felder, loves cooking. He loves the holidays. I didn't even follow up on I'm gonna make a cheesecake. You're like, wait,
cheesecake's not that hard.
No, but he does everything from scratch. When he starts talking baking and his bread, and then we didn't even break down the popcorn. His popcorn, it is like hardcore popcorn. He's got certain oil flavoring. So what he was talking about there is a dinner party where he's going to have separate venues, basically, for the kids and the adults. And I kind of blew the beginning of it. He bought a 10-pound ribeye with like a fat cap on it. So, but he's got the sliders, the dipping sauces, and then the ribeye deep fried. Is that crazy?
That sounds interesting. That sounds weird.
Risky.
Right, because, I mean, at some point, especially with, like, you know, red meats, I would assume you want some sort of crust, some sort of sear, some sort of, you know, outside texture that is a little bit different than the inside.
I didn't ask him if he throws it or, like, finishes it on the grill.
Yeah, right? I would assume that there's got to be some aspect to that. Because I can understand.
You don't think there's going to be a fried crust?
I guess maybe. But, like, I'm not an expert on cooking, but, like, frying, it's, like, pretty uniform. For the most part, what I mean is, like, you know, as you cook it, the interior is going to cook at the same rate as the exterior. No, I guess not. It sounds interesting. I mean, I would try it. Absolutely, I would try it. I'm trying anything. I mean, for the most part, everything, it's got to be good. But
are you cooking on Christmas?
I don't know yet. I don't know what we're doing yet.
Okay.
Because that's the day I have off. So over at Visa, I traded Thanksgiving for Christmas. I worked on Thanksgiving to have Christmas off. So
right.
I don't know what I'm doing. I don't even know my kids will be here. I think they might be in California, so who knows. But I'm down with most of what he said. I don't like horseradish, so like horseradish mashed potatoes.
I love that. Yeah, that floats my boat. Mac and cheese too. Listen to the second part because he talks about he had a debate on one of his podcasts with one of his buddies.
Okay.
What's the bigger night for food and festivities? Is it Christmas Eve or Christmas Day?
Easy answer.
So here's the thing for me. Christmas Eve, I'm trying to get my kid in bed. Like, I want her to be away so that we can get everything set up and we're ready to roll, right? Like, I don't need people at my house on Christmas Eve. And then I got to make a dinner for Christmas Eve, and then I got to clean that up. Then I got to worry about how to put these training wheels on a bike. I had six glasses of wine. What do you think's going to happen?
Yeah.
So we do Christmas Eve is a lot of snacks, and we do snacks and I make dip and we hang out. Maybe we order a pizza even. And Christmas Day is when I do, like, that's when I do, I'm going to do the roast on that day. I'm going to do the mac and cheese. All that stuff's going to happen then. But Christmas will be fully set up when my kid wakes up way before I do. She's going to walk. She knows not to touch anything, but she'll walk out and she'll see all of her presents. Everything's wrapped. And it's her, and it's a really cool time that I get to spend with my wife on Christmas Eve, where it's just the two of us wrapping gifts and just putting them underneath the tree. And she gets to see, like, my wife gets to see, she's like, yeah, we made a good Christmas. Have a glass of wine and relax. Like, it's probably a shot of bourbon too. And then we go from there. But it's like, that's what I like about it. And then on Christmas Day, I wake up and you know your boy is stuffing that garbage bag full of trash immediately. It barely touches the floor.
On cleanup duty.
Between the kitchen, the trash bag, and making sure we got everything prepped, I'm just moving the whole time. And then we sit down and we have a nice dinner. Like it, that's the way that I like it. Everybody else is, everyone's entitled to their own way, but I like it that way because at least on Christmas Eve, we have like just a chill, relaxed time before the chaos starts.
Love the Christmas talk. You give me some ideas, man. I got Christmas Eve and Christmas to put together. So I need to pick your brain.
By the way, here's what you should do. Those King's Hawaiian rolls. Slice them, get you some good, like nice, like spiral sliced ham, slice them up. Don't put the cold stuff on them. Don't put slaw. Don't put anything that's like mayo based. Just get some cheese, some peppers or anything. Then you could put them in the oven. Then you take them out of the oven. Now you got melted cheese. Then the cold stuff, use that as dipping sauce. Bang.
Michael Felder, a college football insider.
I mean, objectively wrong about the order of the Christmas days. That's not how you do your holidays. That's not how you do Christmas and Christmas Eve. Can I ask you a question?
Huh?
What do you do on December 26th, Steve?
What will I do?
Yeah.
Normally, I'm very fired up to go shop.
On December 26th?
Get the clearance stuff, but I also have to work that day.
Correct. You don't use December 25th as some havoc, chaos day where you have to cook all day and then have to clean afterward and do all of that just to be ready for work the next day?
Oh, I think he's fibbing on. He'll have most of the prep done except for
you still have to do the cleaning. You still have to have everybody over. You still have to host. You still have to do all of these things. And then at the end of the night, before you have to go about to normal life the next day, you've got to take care of all that stuff? Absolutely not. Christmas Day is the day where you do nothing. Christmas Day is the day where you order pizza. Christmas Day is where you sit around and you maybe have a drink in the morning like a Bailey's and coffee, and you sit and do nothing. The chaos is the day.
That's not the way I grew up.
Oh, no. Christmas Eve is where it's at.
Like we might have done fish and pasta, but Christmas Day.
Fish and pasta?
Oh, yeah, it's a whole Catholic thing.
What was it, the bear? The seven fishes?
Yeah.
Or whatever it was?
Yep. That was pretty intense.
And what's his face? Brought an eighth fish?
Yeah. Too much. No, I'm not anti-Eve, but I'll tell you this. At Casa de Cofield, there's a request every year to open gifts on Christmas Eve, and I'm like, nope.
No, we don't open
Christmas. I'll open gifts on January 3rd before I open them on Christmas Eve. It ain't going to happen.
Christmas Day is fine. I'm just saying, like,
Christmas, that I wait for that day. That's a surprise day. We're not doing a freaking test gift on Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve is the way to go.
Okay. Well, he said, his buddy on his podcast, that he thinks Christmas Eve is a bigger day. Do everything then and chill on Christmas.
Yeah.
You have kids, though, aren't you? I loved his whole discussion about the intensity of, like, as things are being torn up.
I'm that guy.
The bag's like, let's go. Crush. Get in the bag. No wrapping.
I think that's what he said. Like, the gift wrap for me doesn't hit the ground.
Yeah.
Like, I'm there. I'm picking it all up. I hate clutter. I hate all of it. Like, just get it out of here.
Do you let your kids, can they breathe during the gift opening? Like, if they... I think I was one of those kids who would get sidetracked and start playing with the toy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, it wouldn't, like, the gift opening wouldn't be that smooth.
No, I mean, I think, I don't know if there's an instance. Also, both of them are now getting older to the point where we're having more gift wrapping. You have to understand, too. It's like my oldest just turned 7. Dimitri actually just turned 4 yesterday. Dimitri's just learning how to, like, use his digits in the last year.
Yeah.
So, like, gift wrap opening has always just kind of been all right, let me help you. Yeah. Like, you can't even open it. But now he's finally getting it, so I think now we'll be
you
a
and
more
you
smooth.
And Felder have like some similarities in terms of the intensity. I listen to him at times, and I'm obviously kind of baiting him. His stories about that household, I'm like, man, this guy runs a tight ship.
Oh yeah, we do too in the Von Tobel household.
I wish I lived in Charlotte though, man. That the food menu that he was describing, I'm like, man, I'll come over.
Sounds good.
He's good. I think you have a lot of the same things. You have an intensity about cooking. You're also very experimental.
Dude, made a homemade tomato soup a couple of days ago. Broiled the vegetables, little jalapenos in there, and then I bought a hand blender. So, you know, you just like, kind of blend it up in there, add a little bit of cream. It was great. Some little cheese crustinis. Just get a baguette, covered in cheese, melted in the broiler. Quick, easy, bam.
What night was that?
It's like Tuesday. Okay.
I reheated food that I brought back from Boise on Friday.
I still have some leftovers if you want some. Yeah. Should have brought it.
You live right near me. Give me a call.
Yeah.
Get the homemade food.
It's pretty good. The hand blender was awesome. I bought it just for that. Now I want to do so many things with it.
Home gadgets are fun. Yeah. I wish we had more time in the show to talk about sports and this other stuff. Thanks, John. Thanks, James. We'll see you, everybody. Back tomorrow. Cofield & Company.